Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. I'm Phil Kitramelides. I'm here with Sid Lowe as ever. Hello Sydney.
Hello Philip, how are you?
I'm tremendous, how are you?
I'm not too bad, thank you, yeah.
Good, good, good. I'm recovering from, I'm sort of basking in a really interesting footballing weekend that I enjoyed here in Madrid. I saw the two ends of the spectrum, the footballing spectrum that Madrid has to offer. Because on Saturday, I went to a box at the shiny new Bernabeu with beautiful hospitality, wonderful environment to watch football. And then on Sunday, I went to Vallecas for a restricted view seat for Rayo against Almeria. So it really was the yin and the yang of football in Madrid in perfect harmony. So that was my
weekend. I like it.
Yes. Good. I was expecting to see you at Vallecas, but you didn't come. You left me to go.
I know. I left you. I am sorry about that. I figured that the Seville game was kind of more important. Although with hindsight, I'm not sure how important it really was.
What did I say to you? Nothing is important.
Nothing important. Yes, you did. Yes. Yeah,
because, dear listener, after match day 34, it very much looks like basically everything has been finalised in La Liga. We know who are champions. That's Real Madrid. We know who's going to be playing in the Champions League. We know who's going to be playing in the European competitions. And we almost certainly know who's going down. So more or less everything is not to play for. But still, you should very much listen to us talking about Spanish football for the next few weeks. Anyway, this is what happened on match day 34, Friday night. You didn't manage to get to this one, Sid. Getafe nil.
No, I wish I had. It sounds. I've watched the highlights. It looks quite a lot of fun.
Getafe nil, Athletic Club 2. Very entertaining game. Somehow Getafe managed to not score, and it was a Williams brothers special from Athletic, with Nico assisting Iñaki for both of the Athletic Club goals. Then on Saturday, we saw Real Sociedad beat Las Palmas 2-0. Real Madrid beat Cadiz by 3-0 to secure their 36th league title. Congratulations to Real Madrid. They did so because they beat Cadiz, and Barcelona failed to beat Girona. Indeed, they lost 4-2 again to their noisy neighbours. Atletico Madrid managed to win away from home, which is something we've not said many times this season. They beat Mallorca 1-0. And then on Sunday, Betis won 2-0 at nine-man Osasuna. Celta Vigo had a massive 3-2 win against Villarreal. Alaves had their third win in a row to win away at Mestalla against Valencia. Rayo were absolutely awful in their 1-0 home defeat to already relegated Almeria. Oh my God. Can't believe how bad it was. And Sevilla beat Granada by 3-0. Honestly, Sid, I mean, we're not going to dwell on this game because it's not a big one. But Rayo had 10 shots on target in this game. They're the first side in La Liga for nearly 4 years to have 10 shots on target in a game and not score. When you're playing against the bottom side, a team already relegated, you do that and you don't manage to score it. Really was quite a frustrating evening.
I quite liked Maximiliano's response to this, the Almeria goalkeeper. He was asked about it post-game. He said, well, yeah, I'm very happy to have made the saves and that's my job. It's just a pity it's worthless.
Yes.
That's pretty much it, really. It's all a bit late.
Yes. Tell you what isn't worthless, investing in a subscription to our Patreon is very much worthy. Because for our patrons, we're going to have a Q&A pod and a bonus pod this week out on patreon.com/TSFP, as always. Plus, the patrons will be getting a new episode of Super Seasons. It was supposed to be last week, but it will be this week. And if you haven't already, check out the interview that I did with Cadiz co-owner Ben Harburg right here on the Monday podcast feed. It was a really good chat with Ben, who's a very interesting, very nice man. So go and listen to what he had to say about being owner of Cadiz and other things as well. We'll start with Cadiz's trip to the Santiago Bernabeu this weekend. The maths were very simple on Saturday, Sid, even for us. If Real Madrid beat Cadiz at the Bernabeu and Barcelona didn't beat Girona at Montilivi, Real Madrid would be champions. And that's what happened. Admittedly, Real Madrid played a second string side and Cadiz managed to make them, I was going to say make them work hard. They made them work a little bit. I mean, I was at the game. It was it wasn't a tremendous spectacle. I think, you know, Cadiz can't score goals. Real Madrid weren't that interested in scoring goals because they knew that they'd probably score one in the end. It wasn't an amazing spectacle, but then Brahim scored a magnificent goal just after Chris Ramos had missed a one-on-one. Thibaut Courtois playing his first game of the season and making a brilliant, brilliant stop. And then from then on in, you kind of knew Real Madrid would be champions. The home fans were singing campeones, campeones, even before the Barcelona result. They knew it was going to happen, whether it was this weekend, next weekend. It was inevitable, and so proved the case. But yeah, Real Madrid, worthy winners, Sid. They've been the best team in La Liga by some distance for some time.
Yeah, they have. I don't know if they are the most exciting team in the La Liga. I think for a lot of the season, that was Girona. I think for a chunk of the season, it might have been Athletic. But I don't think there's any doubt that Real Madrid have been the best team and very comfortably the best team. And in a way, this game kind of gave us some of the reasons why. Because you look at a game like this in which Brahim and José Lu score, and you're talking about players from the bench making contributions, even if they're not regular starters. You're looking at a team with a strength in depth, despite one or two gaps in the squad. And of course, this is a side that didn't really replace Karim Benzema, though José Lu came in, that had to restructure the side to find a place for Jude Bellingham, and partly did that because of the absence of I don't want this to sound unfair on José Lu, but because of the absence of a really top elite striker. So they ended up playing that slightly quirky formation, which enabled Jude Bellingham to be that sort of semi number nine. They moved Vinicius into a slightly more central position. They got caught out on the left-hand side against Atletico Madrid in what was that, week six, was it? The only defeat of the season. And then they tightened that up. And Ancelotti was very conscious of that hole on the left-hand side. And they tightened that up. And since then, they've been a team that, while they haven't always been brilliant to watch, or maybe that's not quite the right phrase, actually, not always brilliant to watch. It's sometimes felt a little bit like they've been playing within themselves, that they didn't necessarily need to do a huge amount more. But every time they've needed to, they've been able to. You've got the two Clasicos, admittedly, they win both of those very late. Bellingham scores, I think, in the 94th and 95th minutes of those two Clasicos. The team that's closest to them in the league, and as I say, for most of the season, the only team that looked like they might compete with them to win the title were Girona. Well, in the two games against Girona, they win 3-0 and 4-0. And I think that second game was the game when we all said, OK, that's it, Real Madrid win the league, even though it was finally, I think, decided by the Clasico victory a couple of weeks ago. And after that Girona game, it was very interesting, wasn't it? The way that Michel, the Girona manager, you almost felt like he was slightly relieved to have been beaten, to have been beaten well, because it was as if he was kind of liberated from the pressure and the lie that said that Girona could win the league. Now, I don't think it was necessarily a lie, but I think post-game he was kind of keen to say, look, this is just a team that's just on a different level to us. And as it turns out, it's a team that's on a different level to absolutely everybody this year. Now, I think you can argue that there have been key moments that have gone their way, and maybe if they'd gone different ways, maybe if the two Clasicos had gone differently, it might be different. But I just don't feel, watching Real Madrid this year, any real sense of vulnerability, which we have seen with everybody else. And I think that's really striking. And also, I think there's a lot of praise that's that Madrid deserve, and Ancelotti in particular, because, you know, it looks easy now, but at the start of the season, you get Militao out in, what is it, week two, I think. Courtois out in the summer. Alaba gets injured about 10 or 12 games into the season. You've got quite a big period when Vinicius isn't available. And really, truly, Vinicius, who I think is Real Madrid's best player, and yes, I mean better than Jude Bellingham. Vinicius' season is probably only really half of the season, isn't it? It's around about Christmas time, January, that he starts to get up and running again and you really start to see Vinicius. You had those doubts last year with the way that they were defeated by Manchester City and the feeling that this was the beginning of an acceleration of the transition to a younger, more energetic midfield. And yet, actually, their best midfielder has been Toni Kroos, who, of course, in theory, at least, is coming to the end. In fact, might quite literally be coming to the end because he hasn't yet said whether or not he'll retire at the end of the season. And so I think with all of those ingredients, I think it's probably not a bad idea that we kind of give Madrid the credit for overcoming some of those difficulties. But yeah, the bottom line was Madrid. You look at Madrid and you think they are just better than everyone else. And I think Ancelotti's managed it very, very well. Obviously, their resources are bigger than others. Their strength in the squad, I think, is bigger than other teams. But they've never shown a vulnerability that other teams who should have been able to compete with them, Barcelona and Atletico Madrid, have done, and repeatedly.
You've repeated the word vulnerability there, and you would expect a team that loses its first-choice goalkeeper, first-choice centre-back pairing for almost the whole season to show a sense of vulnerability defensively. And they've conceded 22 goals all season, Sid. It's an extraordinary defensive record. They went and signed the most expensive goalkeeper in history on loan, and he ended up being a backup to Thibaut Courtois' backup, who is André Lunin. Kepa not getting much of a look in, certainly in the 2024 calendar year. Antonio Rudiger's stepped up and been absolutely immense in the heart of defence. Different partners. He's had Nacho, he's had Tchouaméni, he had Nani Carvajal playing there, or Kenny Carvajal did play in the centre of defence at one point. And then, yeah, you said Toni Kroos in the heart of midfield. When he had to, he played alongside Fede Valverde, didn't he, in that sort of double pivot when there was no defensive midfielder for some part of the campaign. You've had the tactical innovations of putting Rodrigo on the left, of moving Jude Bellingham's position. So, yeah, they've been able to deal with adversity. And those tactical innovations, which Carlo Ancelotti has conceived and implemented, is something that doesn't really get talked about that much with Carlo Ancelotti. You hear the praise for his brilliant dressing room management, and he's obviously very good at that, but he's pretty decent at the other stuff as well, Sid.
Yeah, he is. And you know, you're talking about the kind of the mechanics of the team and the way that Ancelotti has moved things around. There's a line from Ancelotti, not exactly sure when, quite early in the season, I would say probably about October time, roughly, when he said that when you're faced by adversity, you get an increase in commitment because you get an awareness of the things that can go wrong. And I suppose that fits hand in hand a little bit with what he said before about liking defenders who are pessimists, you know, liking the defenders who think, oof, this doesn't look good. And so that degree of concentration and focus is that little bit better. And he's talked about the talent in the team and said, you know, if you can get an idea through to the players, and also you can get that commitment and that focus and the kind of, if you like, the intensity in the game, then you know, you've achieved quite a lot, and that should be enough. But I think you're right that one of the things that happens with Ancelotti is that people don't talk about, if you like, the tactical or the mechanical with him, partly because he tends not to. You know, he tends to point the finger at his players. I think that's the nature of his success. It's about making the players feel important. It's about, even when you do impose ideas upon the players, making them participants in that idea, making them feel like they've been listened to, making them feel like they've been kind of like part of the process and had it discussed to them. And I think you also, in a way, I think with Ancelotti, it's quite helpful, even if it's not actually true, to be able to present the things that he wants to do as a necessity, so that you can go to the players and say, listen, you might not like this, and I know this, but this is what we need, and it's what we need from you, and you're doing us all a favour, and making the player feel valued for having done that. And I think this was very clear in Tchouaméni last week, even after the Bayern Munich game. You know, bear in mind that Real Madrid have just gone to Munich and got a really good result. A difficult game again, but a really good result, one where they haven't been beaten. And Tchouaméni very clearly and very publicly and very prepared to say, it's not where I want to play. But if this is what we need, this is what I'll have to do. And it was very similar to what Camavinga was saying about being at left back. It's not where I want to be, but if we have to do this. And I think Ancelotti is very good at not just saying to players, this is where you're going, but saying to players, we need you to do this. We need you to give something to us for, you know, for the benefit of everybody, and making that player feel valued for doing it. And at the same time, thinking about things that, that other managers may not necessarily think about. And as I say, the reinvention of Jude Bellingham. And, you know, Ancelotti was saying earlier in the season, you know, where did this come from? He said, well, we... And obviously the reality is it comes from not having Benzema and Mbappe not turning up yet. But he says he watches games that Bellingham's played for Dortmund, and he sees those moments in which Bellingham gets into the area. Now, what he does, of course, is he takes those clips and he isolates them. And he doesn't take the 90 minutes in which Bellingham's in other parts of the pitch. He takes the three or four times in a game that Bellingham gets into the area and scores goals, and he puts it into a video and he shows it to Bellingham. He says, look, you can do this. We've seen you do this, and we think this is really good for us, and it's really good for you, and you can get loads of goals doing this, and it works. Now, admittedly, Bellingham has had, there's no doubt about it, a climb down, I think, in his level, certainly his goal-scoring level, since around about, what, back end of February. But he's still contributing, and then we've seen Vinicius step up and step into place. And I just think Ancelotti's very, very good at making everything feel natural to his players, even when they don't always feel like it is. And I think for Cruz, for example, this season didn't start. I think I'm right in saying that this season started away at Athletic, and I think away at Almeria as well, although I may have got that wrong. It might be the Celta game. It's certainly two of the first three games. Toni Kroos doesn't start. And this isn't necessarily what Ancelotti is trying to do. But then he puts Kroos in the team. He realises, right, we've got the control. This works. OK, so I now need to make the pieces around them work. And actually, in terms of... if you like, the tangible contribution, this has been Fede Valverde's worst season. Number of assists, number of goals is really low. But his role has been really, really important. And Ancelotti has made sure he knows that. And Ancelotti has said this. And it's, again, it's about making the players feel valued, feel that it's about them, even as he is trying to quietly, and I think the key word actually is gently find solutions. Not impose it on players, even when you are imposing it on players, making the players feel like they've been part of that process. And that's a big part of it. And look, it is true. You've also got really good footballers. You know, there's no two ways about that. I mean, you mentioned Lunin and signing Kepa, who is the most expensive player of all time. Sorry, goalkeeper of all time. I think he's... is he still the most... I think he might be,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
And
yes,
he comes in and he takes Lunin's place because there's a lack of... maybe a lack of trust in Lunin, in truth. Maybe there's a doubt about whether he's really good enough. But you show and you demonstrate that you are prepared to be just. And if Lunin continues to play better than Kepa, and there's a period about 10 or 12 games into Kepa's Real Madrid career in which you've rotated them a little bit, you've left that doubt in the air. And we question that doubt, by the way. We question whether it was a good idea to be swapping from one goalkeeper to the other. And I think deep down, Ancelotti knew it wasn't a great idea, but he wasn't yet sure which was his first choice. And at the point at which he's sure, he just does it and he gets it right. And I think it's been the success of a kind of a quiet league title win, which is a strange thing to say about a team that wins it so well. But in a way, there has been, I think, a feeling of easing towards the title, hasn't there?
Yes.
Almost, I would say, from late January, early February onwards, it's felt like there's been no doubt.
I would say from when they beat Girona 4-0 in February. I
yeah,
think that's the
and
moment,
that's the 10th yeah. of February, isn't
yeah.
it, I think?
Yeah. All right, let's move on. You know, if there's... I'm sure there are many things you want us to talk about in terms of Real Madrid. Send us a question. We'll deal with it on the Q&A pod tomorrow for patrons. But let's talk about that game. Girona 4, Barcelona 2, the same scoreline that we saw at Montjuic earlier on in the season when the two sides met. This was a great game, highly entertaining. And it was a game, Sid, that Barcelona probably should have won when they were 2-1 up.
Yeah, there's a moment post-game on DAZN in Spain. They get the managers out pitch side to talk to the pundits. And one of the pundits is Juan Carlos Unzué, who coached with Guardiola. And so, you know, a lot of the people who worked at Barcelona know him really well. And you get Michel comes out and he sees Unzué. And I suppose that complicity enables him to kind of walk up to him and pat him on the back and say, I don't know how we won that. And yeah, literally start laughing. And I think he's right. I think at 2-1 to Barcelona, it really should have been more than 2-1 to Barcelona. They had loads and loads of chances. And then they get caught out. Porto comes on and scores after 28 seconds to make it 2-2. He sets up Miguel Gutierrez to make it 3-2. I think it's 2 minutes and 14 seconds or something after he's been on the pitch. Within 10 minutes, he's then scored the fourth himself, and it's 4-2. And so I can understand... we'll come on to Girona in a minute. I can understand why Xavi post-game, and with Michel saying that, sort of says, you know, we shouldn't lose this. And I feel frustrated because I feel like the two teams above us in the four games against them, obviously the two against Girona, as you've said, both of them are 4-2. The two against Real Madrid, both of those are 2-1. That's right, isn't it? Hang on.
No, 3-2. Blank.
Yes, they are both 2-1.
2-1 and 3-2. You know,
sorry, 3-2 is the second one. Yes, you're right. Sorry, it's 2-1 and 3-2, isn't it, against Real Madrid? Yeah. And you look at that and you sort of think, yeah, I could sort of see the argument there. But I think the argument falls down on the fact that Barcelona is so vulnerable and that they collapse so quickly. And Xavi, after the game at the weekend, said, you know, this can't keep happening. At the slightest thing, we fall apart. I think they've missed a lot of chances this year and not killed games off that they should have done. I also think they've been defensively vulnerable in key moments. But Xavi described that as puntual, you know, kind of a specific point occasional. At which you make a mistake. Oh. Yeah, I suppose occasional and, you know, one-off moments, I suppose you could call them, couldn't you? One-off moments.
Yeah.
The thing is, if one-off happens more than once,
I mean,
and more than twice, and more than three times, and more than four times, and more than five times, and more than six times, does it still count as puntual? And I think there is, and when Xavi himself is saying we collapse too easily, well, then this is no longer one-off moments, and there is a problem here, and it's either systemic or it's personality driven, or it's something to do with the structure of the team, or it's something to do with, I don't know, the pressure that they feel they're under. But it's the truth is that although you can look at those four games and say that, I think you look at Barcelona's season as a whole and you say this has been a poor season, a really poor season, even after that that run. So Xavi says he's going, and after he says he's going, they play 12 games and they win 10 of them and they draw two of them. And then, of course, they get beaten by PSG. When you look at their last games, 3 goals conceded against Real Madrid, 4 conceded against Girona, 2 conceded against Valencia, in which admittedly they score 4. And 4 now conceded against, Girona? PSG, sorry, is the other one.
PSG, yeah.
That's a lot of goals. That's not a good performance, even if those are really good teams. And it's difficult to avoid the sensation, that's very Spanglish, difficult to avoid the feeling that when the big teams came round again, you weren't good enough again.
And yet, that is not what Xavi is saying, is it? He's saying we were superior to those teams. He says we were superior. Those were literally the words he said. In those 4 games that we played against Real Madrid and Girona, the 4 matches which we lost, each one of them, he said that we were superior in all of them. And I'm sorry, mate, but playing well for 50, 60 minutes does not mean that you are superior to the team that goes on and wins the game. It doesn't.
Exactly.
It just doesn't feel like they can progress. I don't see how they progress when this is the discourse. We were superior, but we didn't know how to see it out. Well, if you don't know how to see it out, you're not superior, mate. Sorry.
That's the next step, isn't it? That's the next step. So this is why, for me, the most significant thing about Xavi saying this is the fact that Xavi said this, if you see what I mean, almost more than the content itself. Because I think you can have a debate about whether those games might have gone a different way. You can have a debate whether about, at times, Barcelona were unfortunate. But when... it so often seems like the discourse post-game is out of sync with what we've all seen, and where it's not really proposing solutions. It's just kind of feeling sorry for itself, I suppose. That's where I think it's problematic. And this is, as you say, you know, more than anything else, it feels like it's not very helpful. And we've heard Barcelona use the words, the word autocrítico. We've got to be self-critical. We've heard them say that a lot, but we've never seen it in the content. There's never actually been that criticism, or at least it's never been consistent enough. There's been lots of reasons, lots of excuses. We've had it blamed on the sunshine. We've had it blamed on the timings. We've had it blamed on individual mistakes. We've had it blamed on moments of lack of concentration. There hasn't been, I don't think, an analysis of, if you like, the structure and the construction of a team. And I think at times that's been problematic. And I think even when you can agree with, if you like, the kind of the fundamental point, the very fact that this is put forward so often as the excuse makes you think that's not going to work, you know. And you're right. It's just not very convincing, is it?
Let's talk about Girona because they have officially qualified for the Champions League in what is only their fourth season ever in La Liga. Yeah. There is obviously the big, shiny asterisk caveating all of this, which is that they are part of the City Football Group, and they probably wouldn't have been able to do this without the City Football Group. They definitely wouldn't have been able to do this without the City Football Group. But there they are. They've done it in a way that hasn't screamed overt involvement from the City Group. Obviously, it gives you access to players and support and statistics that other teams not in that group don't have access to. But yeah, listen, putting that to one side, putting the asterisk to one side, which we all know is there. We all know is there, and we have our feelings on it or not, but it's there. What Girona have done is extraordinary. What they've done is historic. What Michel has achieved with this group of players, which is not a team full of superstars. It's not even a team full of rising, young, brilliant talents, which has been poached from all over the City Football Group. Savio from Troyes, fine. But other than that, this is just a group of players who have found a manager who has been able to get them playing in a brand of football which has excited, which has thrilled, which they've all bought into, and which has reaped dividends.
Yeah. I mean, and this is the thing, isn't it? It is difficult to know where to... When you talk about the big elephant in the room, the big blue elephant in the room and the City Group and stuff, it's difficult sometimes to know where to draw the lines. It is difficult to... Because I'm uncomfortable as well about the idea of dismissing, at least on a human level or on a personal level, the success of the people involved on the pitch, of the players involved on the pitch and what they have done. I think it's naive to ignore it entirely. But I'm uncomfortable with the idea that you judge their success to be fictitious. Because as you say, it's a club.
I don't understand. I mean, maybe someone could explain it to me, or maybe someone could sort of tangibly show us how this is the case. But how does being part of the City Football Group explain how Ivan Martin
exactly
has played, how he has, how Aleix Garcia has developed, how Daley Blind and Eric Garcia have become this incredible... I mean, I don't know. It just doesn't
exactly
feel like something we should dismiss.
Exactly that. And that's why I'm uncomfortable with the idea that you dismiss what these players and this manager have done and you make their success fictitious. Because you look at the squad, Coutinho and Savinho are part of the City Group. They're the only two.
Who?
Their top...
Jan Couto.
Sorry, Couto, did I call him Coutinho? Sorry, Couto, yes. And Savinho. I'm mixing the Inos up. Couto and Savinho are the part of the City Group. They're the only two. You're talking about a salary limit in the summer of 51.98 million euros. Real Madrid's is 727 million. Barcelona's was 270 million. Atletico's is 296 million. Sevilla's is 166 million. They're the 13th biggest budget in the First Division. Now, it's true that some of that budget doesn't need to be spent on things that it would normally be spent on because you've got the, if you like, the financial backing of City, because you've got the structural know-how, you've got the kind of sharing of information and so on. But as you say, you go through those players. Record signing Dovic cost 7.5 million euros. This isn't a team that's been bolstered by loads of huge signings from all over the place and sort of artificially inflated in that sense. Gazzaniga was at Fulham and wasn't starting. Eric Garcia and Daley Blind weren't wanted by Barca and Bayern. You're talking about Savinho. Even Savinho, who is the young player that's going to be really, really great, was in the B team at PSV. Ivan Martin had been relegated with Alaves. Aleix Garcia had joined them when they were in the second division, having been relegated by with Eibar. You know, you're talking about players all the way over the pitch that are not necessarily a big deal. Michel joined them having been sacked by Huesca and Rayo. You know, this is a whole series of people massively overachieving, even with that asterisk that you're talking about. Mm. Even with us saying, and you've got the backing of this. And so, and you know, Porto, for example, who scores the goal, well, two goals, and provides the assist at the weekend, and is kind of a big part of this story. This is a guy that had been relegated with them before and talks about taking the thorn out of his side by scoring this time around, that, yes, then went to Real Sociedad and Getafe. But we're talking Real Sociedad and Getafe. We're not talking about someone who went and played at Milan or at Liverpool or at Bayern Munich or at Manchester United or at Man City. And so, the level of success is still extraordinary. What they've done is still extraordinary. I went through their squad today, Phil, to work this out. Between them, the players in the Girona squad have got 37 relegations. This isn't a team that should be taking a Champions League place. This isn't a team that should be finishing second in La Liga. You know, you talk about Christian Stuani, who has been relegated four times. This is, you know, these are people who, so it's still a huge achievement. And I'm uneasy about this because I don't know where to draw the lines. I don't know where to put that City thing, but I am at the same time unprepared to dismiss as false the success of players who've done something really quite extraordinary.
Totally agree. And it is extraordinary. And it's the way that they've done it as well.
Well, it's playing brilliant football. Great.
Just thrilling. Yeah. Just genuinely just entertaining. Pure entertainment. Girona have been for some time as well. They were doing this for like the last 2-3 months of last season as well. They were really exciting. Yeah. And they've just gone on now to next level. And it helps that they went and signed Dovbyk, who is the top scorer in La Liga this season with 20 goals. Congratulations to Girona. They will be playing Champions League football next season. We don't have much time for much else on today's podcast. But like I said, if you've got a question, if there's something else you want us to talk about, do send it along and we'll deal with it on tomorrow's Q&A. The Segunda División leaders Leganés needed a 94th minute winner to beat Eldense 2-1 and avoid a sixth draw in a row. They're still top, but they're level on points with Valladolid, who won 1-0 at Mirandés. Eibar are third. They beat Amorebieta 5-0. Then it's Espanyol in fourth, followed by three teams level on points. Oviedo, Racing Santander and Elche. It is still ludicrously close in the Segunda, with a whole handful of teams still battling for promotion. Congratulations also to Castellón, who won promotion to the Segunda. They're 11 points clear at the top of the Primera Ref Group 2. You went and spoke to their owner, Bob Vulgaris, a couple of months ago for a very interesting piece in The Guardian, which everyone should go and dig out and read because it's well worth checking out if you haven't already. So congratulations to Castellón. And this week we've got the small matter of Real Madrid against Bayern Munich on Wednesday in the second leg of the Champions League semi-final. We'll be at the Bernabeu to see what happens and we'll talk about it on Thursday's bonus podcast. So why don't you become a patron? patreon.com/TSFP. Loads of content there. And if not, it's not a problem. We'll just keep churning out the free content for you here every single Monday. Adios, amigos.
Cheerio.